Hey, is this thing on? Testing. Welcome to the Boost VC podcast, your weekly dose of fun, informative interviews with incredible guests from the Boost VC network. We'll dig into the latest topics around venture capital, startups, and emerging technologies. I'm your host, Adam Draper, founder and managing director of Boost VC and a fourth generation venture capitalist. Are you ready to rock? Tell me what you're gonna do. And we're welcomed here today by Richard Browning, founder of Gravity, where they are building a real life Iron Man suit. And I'm personally very, very excited about talking to Richard. We actually, fortunately, were able to have Richard do a demo flight at a Boost VC demo day, and it was awesome. So welcome, Richard, onto the Boost VC podcast.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm going to start out with like the obvious question. Why are you building an Iron Man suit?
It's a very fair question. I would answer it by simply saying this started out about 18 months ago as genuinely a kind of joy-fueled exploration into something that was considered to be fairly impossible. I guess throughout my career and my non-work life, I've always been a bit of a glutton for going after interesting challenges. I especially like it when people say stuff can't be done, and most of the time they're right, unfortunately, but every now and then it's super fun when you prove that they're not. And you know, there's a lot of elements to this which are quite exciting. I mean, the whole challenge of flight has always, I guess, inspired mankind. Since we looked up in the sky, that's an easy one. But then the whole challenge of doing it by leaning on and relying on the human mind and body very much, and then building a bit of technology, subtle but very elegant technology around that human being, rather than putting the human in a flight machine. It's a subtle difference, but it makes all the difference. It makes the outcome very different. That was really how we started, and then it was just as you can see on the online and things like the TED Talk, you can see we just went through hundreds and hundreds of little iterative steps, learning as we went, learning from a lot of the time falling over, and got to a place where we daren't imagine. And now I'm happy to claim we've got very, very coherent flight capability. We can move around in three dimensions like I'd never imagined we could do.
Okay, so what's your background? So if you're going to be flying, what's the background of someone who actually tries to take on the Iron Man suit problem?
Yeah, and I would say, I mean, the Iron Man thing, just to touch on that quickly. So I genuinely didn't actually start out to build an Iron Man suit. Otherwise, we would have sprayed it kind of golden red. It did dawn on us about halfway through the journey in 2016 that, this is increasingly edging towards looking like that certain famous Marvel character, which is cool. I'm delighted for other people to draw that parallel, but it's just quite funny that we didn't end up with that objective. We just ended up going there because that turned out to be quite a neat design. Not that we're exactly emulating the suit in totality, but it's not far off. Anyway, so yeah, the background, I mean, gosh,
would you rather me say flying suit than Iron Man suit? Or
No, I don't mind. I don't mind now. I just want to sort of clarify that wasn't the starting objective. It's kind of, you ended up accidentally there, if you sort of mean. So no, I'm very happy for people to draw that analogy. It sets the bar pretty high, I think, with the next version of the technology we're working on. Right now, I think we'll actually get very close to the capability you see in that film. There's a few things that science fiction have made look doable that I'm not sure are, but there's an awful lot of it I think we're very close to being able to deliver. But anyway, in terms of background, so I'd say the biggest single ingredient, apart from a fair decent amount of technical understanding, but very little of it formal. I mean, I understand quite a lot about gas turbines and the physics involved in flight and a fair amount of engineering, but not much of it formal, really. My background's an oil trader with an oil major. I would say the primary ingredient, the most important ingredient, is having the passion and drive and curiosity to go down that pathway. I think it's quite easy to sit on a couch, sit on a sofa, and kind of idly wonder about crazy ideas. But if you can just get off that sofa and go, and then start the very first small step towards that idea, even if you don't get to where you thought you were going to get to, you'll learn a ton on the way, and maybe open up other opportunities on that journey. I think that's the critical characteristic you need.
Oh yeah, completely. Well, I mean, I always say persistence. It's just like making sure that you finish what you decided to start.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and those are generally the thing. You make it sound sort of just like it was a bar bet. Like, one night at a bar, we were like, hey, let's try to fly.
It might well have been. Yeah, I mean, it might as well have been. This was genuinely weekends and evenings. It's amazing how you can put off sleep if you're doing something you're really excited by. This teased us so many times along the journey, and you can see some of it again with the clips online. You know, you get out to the test location after working pretty much all night, and you go and try something, and within 5 minutes, you got some breakage somewhere, which meant you couldn't do anything. But you were right on the cusp of knowing if that breakage hadn't happened, the rest of it had worked great. And in theory, we could take off. You know, so you sort of spend the next, day, Saturday, whatever, alongside wrestling the family, to trying to get that little thing fixed, to try and get back out to that farm and test something, and then something else breaks, and then I think persistence is a key thing, like you just said, or never losing the passion for getting to that point where we did, towards the end of 2016. There's a clip online of showing where I had an engine on each leg and two on each arm, and I do this. It's about 6 second flight, and my right leg is swiveling all over the place trying to keep balance and stuff. That was the pivotal moment. That was the point where we actually achieved the first coherent flight. I mean, that was actually, the human body lifting up, traveling horizontally for 6 seconds and landing again in a controlled, reasonably controlled way. That was just awesome. I didn't imagine we'd get to that stage, and we did. And it teased us for about 2 months beforehand with all the components were there to make that theoretically possible. For various and very annoying reasons, it hadn't happened. But that was a very cool moment.
And the really interesting thing I find about what you are accomplishing is actually there is a technical feat that needs to happen, but you're balancing it with this physical and mental feat where it's sort of like you're building an exoskeleton for all intents and purposes that is enhancing what you have to be able to do. How much training have you had to do in order to be capable of flying the suit?
Yeah, this is an interesting one. So there's no doubt that the lighter you are, the easier it is with physics, right? You need less power, therefore you need less fuel and all the rest of it. But at the same time, you need some decent shoulder conditioning to even just walk around with the engine mounts on your arms. I mean, I'm very used to it now, but I don't take that for granted, that when I usually hand them to somebody, they usually look kind of surprised.
You said it was something like 40 kilos, right?
Well, that's the thrust. When the thrust comes in, they're pushing back up at you with about 45 kilos. So what's that, like, 100, over 100 pounds or so. That sounds like quite a lot. But then on the other hand, you're only getting pushed up as much as you need to in order that you and the equipment can lift off. So, in the early, what I generally say about this is, yes, I think there is an element of you need to be quite light and quite strong and to be comfortable doing it. I think as we've refined the system, the physical requirements have reduced. They've lessened. They're not quite as extreme as they were. I it's hard to judge, though, in a way, because no one else has ever flown this before. It's kind of hard to be really objective about it. I am now supremely happy and relaxed flying it around. The only bit of me that's not relaxed is the slight worry that I get an engine failure and I sort of spin around and fall on my rear. But we're addressing that. In terms of the physical effort for me, I genuinely don't notice it anymore. I bring my arms down, rise up, fly towards the crowd. I can stop really quickly, rotate round. I can just move wherever I like. It's just like riding a bike in the sense that you don't think consciously about steering into your wobbles. You just do, right? You're busy enjoying the view. In the same way, I've learned to do that with this. And I think in the right environment, most people could learn this within, probably 45 minutes of cumulative time in the saddle. I don't think it's as, the way we've now designed and built this, there's lots of subtleties built into it, which we've learned the hard way, make this an awful lot easier to do. And my aspiration is we'll get to a stage quite soon, especially with beefing up the power on the back and adjusting some critical parameters on the arms. I think we'll get to a point where most people who are in reasonable shape and not too heavy can experience this very novel form of flight.
How many flights have you done at this point?
Gosh, yes. I should have kept some sort of, like chess clock going every time I lifted off. I suppose proper pilots actually keep a log of their hours, don't they? In the early days, they weren't so much flights. They were like rise up, oh my God, panic, realize something wasn't quite right and land again. So they weren't very, you know, it would have been a bit tedious keeping track of all of those. I mean, in the last few months since you've gone public, I must have done 40 flights, I reckon. I mean, in some days I was doing 3 a day. That was starting to get quite tiring, I have to say. You know, wrestling an 800 horsepower flying suit, whilst I've just spent 5 minutes saying how easy it is, it's still quite demanding, I suppose. But I think I've done an awful lot now. I wouldn't like to guess. I've done a good number of hours flying, I would say.
And is the dream to make this a vehicle for travel, or is it to make this Quidditch in Harry Potter, where it's a sport? What's your dream for that? You succeed in 10 years. How has the world changed?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So first of all, I'll cop out and say, you know, go back to the starting point, which was just to have a huge amount of fun doing something supposedly impossible. But then to ask the kind of surprise that, you know, the fact this has worked so well and the fact this seems to have ignited so much passion around the world. I mean, that TED Talk's done over 500,000 views in 10 days. And, you know, we hit like 70 million views when we went live back at the end of March. You know, I actually, not only is there a huge outcry, there seems to be we get a huge number of people contacting us every day asking us, you know, where can they come and see it, and where can they come and have a go, and, you know, and can they have a go at rating it and all this sort of stuff. So we're working on some ideas with one of the LA agencies that we're now involved with, to potentially, in partnership with the folks who did a great documentary film of me, the Red Bull folks, potentially to build an air race series where we actually run a TV series looking for, a flight race team. So we kind of scour the world looking for the lightest, youngest, strongest, fittest, whatever, most enthusiastic, you know, flight people, far better than me. I'm getting too old to do that, really.
You're like running a Top Gun.
Hey, exactly that. Well, you joke, right? So Tom Cruise took a great interest in this when I was the other guest on a Spanish talk show, and he wants to meet up in second half of July. I don't want to second guess, but I mean, he was super excited by the whole thing, and I want to see if I can get him flying in it. So he could be one of the judges, which would be quite cool. Anyway, so the winners of this thing could then go on a world tour and do essentially Red Bull Air Race pylon racing. Because I think when you introduce a bit of competition into this, I think the physical capabilities of this will go through the roof. I mean, even now, I can accelerate to 35 miles an hour and stop pretty much instantly and then rotate and then, you know, go wherever I like. So, I mean, the idea that you're racing each other, I think it'll look awesome.
Oh, it would look... I can't undersell how incredible it is to watch... Like, watching the demo of you flying... And you were a meter off the ground. It wasn't... You know, you were...
I played safe.
Yeah, you played... But it blew my mind. And it was because it was your first travel journey. Like, you wanted to make sure everything functioned correctly. It was your first demo, but... I can't undersell or oversell, I guess, how incredibly awesome it was to watch someone fly, because your brain does this thing where literally your whole life you've been watching people, you know, succumb to gravity, and then all of a sudden you watch someone take off and your brain's like, wait a second, the person's not on the ground anymore. This is freaking me out. It was the coolest thing ever. I freaked out. I'm ready to admit.
You're on film freaking out. It's brilliant.
I am on film freaking out. It blew my mind, and and it was so exciting. And so I do think. And by the way, I think all great technologies, they all start as a toy or a game, such as, you know, the internet, the computer. Blockchain, everything starts sort of virtual reality, starting with games. And I feel that this might be follow that path, where this could be a platform for tons of stuff. And we start with it just is a game at the beginning, where you literally just race people around the world.
I'd agree. So I've actually been really surprised by the sheer range of applications that people have asked us to go and pursue. So as this improves, I mean, even as it is now, you could do some of what I'm going to describe, but certainly as it improves, short-range CASEVAC, short-range medical kind of help. When the Italian earthquake struck, they cut off hundreds of little villages all in these mountainous areas. And often it was only like a half a mile of or quarter of a mile of road blockage. and the search and rescue teams and the medical teams had to wait for helicopters, of which there's, you know, only a finite number. If the first responders had the ability to rise up and skim along the ground 3 meters above the ground fairly safely over obstacles and then land, you know, half a mile, quarter of a mile up road, they could actually access places, you know, in a civilian context and obviously clearly from a military point of view as well, very, very efficiently. I mean, a slightly more somber application, it did occur to me when we had the London, well, we've had a few attacks now, but one of the London attacks where the police were reported to have shot dead the assailants within 8 minutes of the call going out. It suddenly occurred to me the most efficient way of moving rapid reaction kind of civilian protection forces around an urban area. Again, you don't have to go very high. You just need to get high enough to get around traffic and obstacles and whatever. It would be far quicker than a helicopter or a motorbike. And you've also got, and again, this is linking to some of the military interest, you've also got the potential of those operatives, if they're medical or whatever, moving in a way that they're all independent. So if there's a problem with a helicopter or you know, whether it's got a technical problem or it can't land in a small area, or if from a military point of view, if that become, you know, comes under attack, you've got a problem. Whereas with what we've developed, all of those operatives, those medics or whatever, are all independent. They're all moving themselves as they see fit, independent of each other. So that's quite a novel and interesting application. And as I say, we've got the capability to make quite a difference.
I would pay to watch someone jump out of a helicopter wearing your suit and then fly away.
That has been suggested. So we could, in theory, I'd have to do a bit of work to strap down some of the things that, you know, free-falling might get a bit loose.
I'm not saying now. I'm assuming a couple of years out. Like,
I don't work in years. No, that's ridiculous. I'm thinking, honestly, some of the developments we've had in the last 2 months are just awesome. And I'm kind of, we're now in this more grown-up world where I can't just stick it on YouTube anymore. So we're going to have to, you know, keep that for the right event. But I do feel like, because we've cracked so many assumptions that suggested this was never going to be feasible, having cracked those, we've opened up into a whole new world where there's loads of cool stuff we can do very easily and very quickly to make a big difference.
That's super exciting. So now the next part of the podcast is, I call it the lightning round. And I just ask you a bunch of seemingly unrelated questions and then you answer them fast or long. It really, I don't know why I call it the lightning round technically, because sometimes people talk more during this part of it than the other part.
That's the intention anyway.
Okay, ready? Lightning round! What is your favorite movie?
I'd be a fraud if I didn't say Iron Man now, wouldn't I?
No, I don't think so. I think it would have been really funny if you said, like, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
There's another cool one, which is not my favorite movie, but I'm going to plug it anyway, because I love what's said in it, even though it's produced kind of didn't seem to do very well. I think it's called Tomorrowland, and it's all about this future world where you need amazing technology and you've got to connect with people in the past and bring them forward and all this kind of stuff. But there's a cool kid in it who builds a jetpack, and I'll leave it for people to go and watch the film. But he said something very cool when asked, why did you build a jetpack? And I need to borrow that kid's speech. Anyway, yeah, there's my answer.
I love it. It didn't perform great.
The story's brilliant, but it just didn't all hang together in film form.
But you did send me a bunch of clips from it, and it is amazing the technology that people have dreamed up in that movie. I think that's awesome, been. If you could give one celebrity a high five, who would that be?
Dear, it's all going to be relevant to the story here. I guess it would be Downey Jr. because I'd want to high five him in the suit.
Oh my gosh, that would be the best. I would love that. What's your favorite place you've ever been?
Oh, that's a tricky one. Gosh, I've been to some pretty cool places actually. Probably some of the remote places we've paddled in Canada. Yeah, I'd say with the family, we do long canoe trips, like Canadian canoe trips, and some of those really, really remote paddles, like up in the Yukon, we did a one last summer. That was pretty awesome, just because of the sheer remoteness. You're just feeling so far removed from the rest of society and civilization and phones. that was pretty cool. Let's stick the Yukon in there for the moment.
Okay, the Yukon. No one has said the Yukon on this so I Yeah,
and let me just clarify, Yukon in the summer.
Yukon in the summer. You are trapped on an island with one food. What is that food?
Hey, these are tough. There's a it would be pretty grim, but I'm slightly addicted to this kind of spread stuff my wife discovered. It's all biscotti. It's essentially liquid biscuit, but you put it on, spread it on like toast or stuff, and it's awesome. I guess I'm slightly addicted to that stuff. I don't know what I'd put it on, but whatever I put it on, it would taste good.
Like bread and biscotti stuff? Okay.
Yeah, biscotti, yes, exactly. There you go. That would be pretty cool.
If you could have dinner with two people from history, who would they be? Like, dinner table, two people.
Yes. Somebody like, I mean, there's loads of cool people, and I'm sure there'd be more relevant ones to what I'm doing than I'm going to think of. But, yeah, I mean, it'd be quite cool to have dinner with one of the Wright brothers. I don't need both, because then I can get more bang for my buck. I'd say something like Churchill, only because I just thoroughly respect his kind of no bullshit sort of can do, I'm just going to get on and get stuff done type attitude. That's a weird combination, isn't it? But anyway,
if you read Churchill quotes, they're the best quotes on the planet.
Yeah, no, exactly. He's just brilliant. I mean, he was the right man for the job, and I love his attitude.
And the last question is, what is your definition of success?
Waking up every day and having a huge amount of fun.
Love it. Well, thank you, Richard, for coming on the show. And this has been fantastic.
No problem. No, pleasure to talk to you.
Unfortunately, we don't have enough time for Mark Zuckerberg today. But tune in next week when he's available. Thank you so much for tuning in during your busy day to learn more about emerging technologies. We at Boost VC are happy that you're a part of our community. Make sure to check us out at Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Boost VC. Or go to our website, www.boost.vc. And remember, love your tribe, hustle every day, and stay true to yourself. This is Adam Draper, signing off.
Big black eagles flying around this town. One of these days he's gonna pay a visit, drop his load on the ground.